Okay, so first week we're doing the class, and you know y'all are already behind. We're on chapter one. Can't help it when we do things like this. So I understand. You understand. I hope that I'm going to be covering stuff tonight that you haven't read. But let me tell you what the class is going to be like. In this class, it's going to be helpful if you read. In the last class I told you, if you were in there with us this past semester, I told you don't have to read for that class. It wasn't necessary. But for this one, it's a big part of the class to read the chapters. There's a little bit of homework at the end of the chapters, like three questions. And part of that, we'll talk about it in class. And I'm not going to check grades or anything, but
don't worry.
But that's part of what's helpful. This is going to be an interactive class. I invite discussion. I will find places and times to ask questions of y'all, and hopefully, you know, you'll get the feel for that. It's sort of lecture-y because, you know, I want to direct the discussion and make sure we cover some things. But if we need to, you know, hijack that one night, if y'all have something that's important that you want to discuss or an issue that's come up, or, you know, we have some latitude for that. But tonight, we haven't read, and I know everybody has a concept of what anger is and what they think we're going to talk about. And I will promise you, you will read some things that you didn't consider. You'll see some things from a new perspective, I believe. So, at the very least, I think we'll grow in our understanding of this biblical idea of anger. Because remember, it's not just a psychological term. The Bible uses the word, and we use that word anger a lot. So this is, even though we're talking about something pretty common, it's a Bible study. A Bible word. So the Bible will be our last word on this. Our author, his name is David Pallison. And I mention that because in the world of Christian psychology or Christian counseling, there's a lot of different personalities and there's a lot of different perspectives on how you should do that. And mostly it's the clash or the collision between the secular world of psychology, which is largely bent on kind of pulling us away from, I think, spiritual truth. And some people have made the claim that psychology was invented to replace God. Okay. So naturally, a lot of Christian counselors would say, well, let's stay away from that. But then again, there's been a lot of good research and a lot of good thought done, regardless of, you know, the origin point or, let's say, the study of psychology. And so what David Pallison tries to do is walk the line of using information that's good, things that have been learned through the years of secular studies and medical studies, and in his experience, counseling in all kinds of situations, but at the same time, letting the Bible have the final word. So, I like that. I like that approach. I think that's the common sense approach, not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But in our book, we're not going to get into a lot of psychobabble or things like that. So don't worry about that. This is not a psychology class. I'm telling you that because we're looking at this as a Bible study in the sense that anger is a biblical word, but we're also looking at this in the sense of a study or a look at human nature. So there's going to be some more of that. You know, it's not just the Bible says don't be angry. There's a lot more to it than that. and we'll get into some of that too. He says himself what he's going to do in the book, what he's not. By the way, we're just kind of walking through the introduction and chapter one. You know what? Let me go ahead and say this. I will encourage So what are we going to talk about if we're not talking about just like scripture passages? We'll talk about things like motives, desires, our impulses as human beings. The overarching topic is anger, but like a lot of biblical topics and a lot of emotional and personal things, there's a lot of overlap. So anger is going to touch a lot of parts of our lives and a lot of parts of our spiritual life. So it's not all just what you think about when you think about anger. So let's kind of jump right into the text here. Right there on page one, maybe towards the top, he says something that might be kind of hard to understand. Actually, it's on the bottom, the last paragraph there. It says, "He is willing and able to teach us to do anger right." Now, he there is Jesus. So the quote would be, "Jesus is willing and able to forgive us for our anger gone bad. He is willing and able to teach us to do anger right." Okay. Now, can you imagine that there is a right way to do anger? There is. Sorry, I played with my watch. I apologize. I cannot help it. It's not in the right place, and I can't put it right where I want it. So I'm fidgeting. I'm going to try to leave it alone. But there is a right way to do anger. So in other words, in the class, my goal is not going to be to help you never be angry. That's not what we're going to do. I'm not going to teach you or coach you how to like suppress your anger, push it down, avoid it. We're going to teach you how to do it right. Because that's what the Bible teaches. There's a righteous anger. And the Bible, by the way, does say, what? Be angry and do not sin. Everybody knows that. So what does it imply? It implies that there's a way to be angry and sin, and there's a way to be angry and not sin. So there's a right and a wrong way to do anger. So that's the big picture that we're going to talk about. So I won't be telling you how to suppress your anger or keep you from being angry. I'm not going to make you feel bad for being angry, although you might feel bad for being angry. I'm not going to try to do that. The author here is telling us the right way. On page two, he makes an assertion that everyone struggles with anger. Everyone struggles with anger, he says. And he makes the point, even if we don't all express our anger in the same way, and we don't, of course, we think of anger and we think of a kind of person. We think of somebody with explosive personality and volatile and shouts and yells, and yes, that person probably is angry. But that's not the only way to express anger. It's not the only way to experience anger. So we're going to kind of dig into in a later chapter or two, just ask the kind of the obvious question, what exactly is anger? Like, what is that? You can put a definition to it, and he will later on, but if you and I, having not taken the class before, and having probably not defined it, try to think about what exactly is anger? It's a little more complex than you thought. It's hard to define it without using a synonym. Well, it's getting mad. It's getting upset. You know? What is that? So, what is exactly anger? It's part of the issue we'll talk about. So, we're going to deal with our anger, not eliminate it. That's the idea. We're going to deal with it. Another quote from him on this page, he says, "Anger is not a problem to solve, it's a human capacity." So what he means by that, what he was getting across is, you know, there are things that are a problem to solve. Covetousness, greed, malice, arrogance. Those things are not good. There's not a good way to be malicious, right? There's not a good way to be greedy. Fear can be good. Fear of the Lord. Fear can be bad. Fear of man. Love can be good. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Or love the world. Love the devil. Love the money. Not good. So there's ways to do some things good and bad. And that's similar to anger. Anger is something that's a human thing. It's a human capacity. We were given that capacity by God. And it's our job to use it in the right way, to channel it in the right way.
So would you say that anger is a communicable attribute that we both share, that we share with God, when in the right context or in the right?
100%. Yeah, I mean, I think it is 100%. I don't know that he's going to get into that. Maybe we will later on in chapters. I haven't gotten to the end yet, to be honest with you. But it is definitely, and I think we will kind of talk about some of that image of God in righteous anger later on. But yeah, you see in the scriptures, God is angry. And certainly he doesn't sin in that. But you don't see God as greedy or, you know, covetous. So there are, like you said, communicable attributes here. And this one is one of those. I guess maybe if I thought about it, probably every attribute has a way that we've twisted it into sin in some way, even love, like I mentioned earlier. But yeah, anger is a human capacity. So on page 2, Pallison kind of tells you, he says, this is what the book is not. Basically, he said, it's not a self-help book. He's not going to give you special techniques for handling anger. He's not going to give you self-affirming truisms or help you reframe your self-talk to even out your moods. Not going to give you deep breathing and relaxation techniques to help you keep your cool. He says, I definitely want to encourage you to get in touch with the real you and tell the world how you really feel. So he's kind of introducing in two ways. He's kind of maybe putting down that kind of stuff, that self-help kind of, I won't say junk, but something like that, self-help stuff. And contrasting that with what he's going to do, what we're going to do. Talk about anger in a biblical way. How to handle anger so that it produces good. Now, don't hear me saying that every time you get angry, like, that's going to be good. You will see pretty clearly by common sense, you know, that there are some times you should be angry, right? I'm not trying to say, anger's great, lean into it. That's not what we're saying. I'm overcorrecting a little bit right now, because I think we do tend to think that all anger is bad. We should just get rid of it, stamp it down, suppress it. That's why we're kind of harping on that idea. On page 3 of the introduction, it's the first paragraph that's on there, kind of the middle, he says, I have found that we learn the most from little things, the everyday disappointments, frustrations, disagreements, and complaint. What we learn transfers to the big things. Now, man, I'm a huge fan of that idea, because through the years, if you were to ask my kids in general, what are the things that make Dad the most frustrated? You could probably even say angry. What are the things that make me the most angry? The things I get the most upset about? And I think they will probably tell you, it's the little things. It's the small things. Because if I have two kids who are in a fight over something, you know, somebody did something to somebody, now they're fighting, I get that. You were provoked. It was wrong, but I get it. What I don't get is somebody sitting there minding their own business and you walk by and slap them on the back of the head. Or whatever. Or just, that kind of is not a little thing. But a snarky comment when you didn't have to. Somebody got an A in school and you're like, about time. That drives me bananas. Why? Because it's small. It wasn't provoked. And it tells me what's really in your heart. Like, there's no, if something is provoked, if it's comes from a temptation, I kind of get that. But if it kind of pulls itself out of nowhere, to me, the little things tells me what's really down in the heart, and I can really deal with that. It's so he kind of makes that point too, and the little things become big things. So we nip it in the bud, as Barney Fife would say. You know, we don't let it grow out of control. I think that's the right approach to almost anything. But when it comes to anger, I think that's going to be our secret weapon there. Don't wait until you blow up and lose your mind and you know, erupt to be like, okay, I should tone it down a couple notches. Like, it's the first signs of bad anger. We'll handle those things before they become big things. I had a question in here, but I don't know if I want to get into this. I wrote it down. It sounded good on paper. I was going to ask, like, what really sets you off? What makes you angry? I don't want this to turn into a people getting angry. Because if you start thinking about what makes you angry, then you're probably going to get angry. You know what I mean? So I don't know if that's a good question. I guess the better way to put it is, do we find ourselves getting angry at the small stuff?
Drivers
at Tom is a great example. He's going to talk about traffic a lot. That's a good whipping post. Traffic, a driver who's rude, somebody who just can't get your order right. Maybe you got kids and they won't quit bugging you about something. And it's just, they're not being mean or not doing anything wrong. It's just annoying. And by the time you've heard it four times, and then the fifth kid comes to you and asks the same question.
Amen.
Do you lose your mind?
You lose your mind.
Have you ever been around 20 kindergartners?
I can tell. No. God bless you. It is the little things, isn't it? And, you know, there's a good thing there. One of my kids, I'll go ahead and tell you, Will, the oldest one, when he was little, he used to tell me, he told us more than once, he said, "Dad, just seems like I always get in trouble." And I said, "Yeah, Will, it feels like that to me too." But what I told him, I said, "You know, buddy," when he got a little bit older, I said, "This is a good thing for you. You don't know it now, but all the things you're doing now that you're getting corrected on, you're going to have that licked before the other kids, because they're hiding, they're sneaky." And Will's just like that. He's just out there. He's an open book. He doesn't lie. I mean, he's my kid, but I can tell you, he don't lie. I don't even think he knows how. He don't know how to hide stuff. Now, I'm not saying he never lies, but I'm just saying he's always been an open book. And in a way, I think I was right earlier to say he has kind of got opportunity to work on a lot of things that other people haven't, because they were a little bit better at hiding it. They didn't have to deal with it, you know. And for us, if we can see these things when they're little, we're going to have opportunity to deal with it before it blossoms into something big, hopefully. Now, if it's already big, you already are in the volcano, we'll get to that too as well. There are four sections in our book. We're still in the introduction, remember. So, to give you, you can see on your syllabus here, they're colored. So, we've got four kind of big movements of the book. And the first section is our experience. So, this is where we talk about maybe ourselves a little bit. Get to ask ourselves some tough questions. You know, be really honest with yourself. Oh, y'all need some... Y'all need a syllabus, guys?
I was just pretending like I knew where we were.
There you go. And then the second section is where we ask the question, what is anger? And that's not just a one-sentence answer. We're gonna deal with the nature of anger in its various forms. The third one is how to change, which is probably what we think about when you thought about the class. And the last one, which I love when people do this, tackling the hard cases, because it's real easy to talk about, like, losing your temper in traffic, and everybody kind of laughs, and it's a silly thing, but anger is a pretty serious thing on down the line. We'll talk about how destructive it is, but it's not a nice thing. It is a destructive thing. So it can be complex. It can be dangerous. So we'll get to that last, tackling hard cases. And then there's three suggestions he makes for reading the book. And so we're going to do it in a class style, but I think reading the book, the suggestions work well as well. He says, read with a pen in hand and a highlighter. I like that. I do that anyways. But that's just to get your brain functioning and flowing, right? If you read with a pen, for you, that's fine. Again, I'm not going to check your notebooks or anything. But I think it would be helpful. I think it's a good suggestion. And the third note that he gives, I love it, actually. He says, note down the times you start to think, but what about, he calls them the BWAs, but what abouts? And I love that because we do, he uses the phrase hijack. He says, don't let the but what abouts hijack the process, which means, you know, you're reading something along and all of a sudden you think, yeah, that's good for this, but what about that? And you kind of lose focus on where we are. And so what he says, when you come to those, write them down. Write down your but what abouts. Write about the thing that's the big question that's not been answered yet. And there's a couple things. Maybe we're going to answer that in the coming pages. We might. And if we don't, then you've got it written down and we can come back to that. The last class will be a summary. It'll be a catch-all. So if there's something that hasn't been covered, now, if you're thinking, well, how do I know if it's a but what about or just a regular question? We'll just have to figure that out. I'll let you decide if it's something that you think might be covered or if it's something that we're not going to get to. But at either rate, writing it down is a good practice because I don't know if you're like me, but forget things. You know, you get a great idea or a great question in the moment and then comes to class and what was that? So write them down. That'll be good. So, as far as my part of the class, what I want to say is if you are here, if you've been with me in any other class, you know how I like to teach through a book like this. But I'm going to go ahead and remind you. One, be humble and open-minded. Come to this expecting to learn, expecting to hear something maybe that challenges you, and not dismiss it. I'm not saying buy hook, line, and sinker, but give it a chance. Be open-minded. Be humble. Maybe you're wrong. You know, maybe there's something you thought forever. Maybe you're wrong. You know? Now, on the other hand, be wise and be shrewd. Don't accept it just because David Pallison says it. He's not God. This isn't the Bible. He might be wrong. Okay? So, we come to it kind of from both perspectives. And the good thing about that is we can glean the good out of here and leave the rest behind, and you'll still get it. Something good from it, even if it's a small thing. We'll get something out of this, hopefully, that's worthwhile. So that's my encouragement to you, because a lot of times I know when a minister stands up with this book and says, this is the book we're reading, there's a temptation to feel like, okay, Woody says this book is good. That means if I don't agree with something here, then I'm wrong. That's not necessarily. So I don't want you to feel like that. And especially if you read something that's like kind of crazy, which probably shouldn't be in this book. There's been a time or two when I've had a book and I've had to tell you like, hey, this is messed up. Don't, you know, 90% of this is great, but this one chapter here, just disregard it. I've done that before. I'm not afraid to do that. But so that's your marching orders for reading the book. Now chapter one, we'll look at, I hope we'll get through this tonight. A little bit of time. So chapter one is called Angry People. Okay. And he kind of sets us up here, okay? He's gonna talk about some angry types of people and give some concrete examples. All the while we know really he's saying, you know, you're angry too. I'm gonna give you that. I'm gonna go ahead and tell you that. So the power and danger of anger on page 7. Listen to this. Anger, in real life, anger is the reaction that incinerates marriages, disintegrates families, it energizes gossip, guns down classmates, divides churches, turns friendship into enmity, and erupts in road rage. It's the stuff of every form of grievance and bitterness. What do you think about that? Does that sound accurate? You know, it's lighthearted in some ways, but it's a heavy thing. And you've probably seen that. You don't have to look very far to see something like this, and I'm not saying everybody has that problem, but everybody's been around that. Everybody's known someone or seen this, seen it in a marriage or seen it in a church or seen it in road rage, like real road rage. There's plenty of other examples of anger gone wrong. We could name them all night long. And I don't know that we need to do that. I think we all get the picture. Anger is destructive. But what else about anger that's a little bit, gets lower billing on the billboard? He says the basic DNA of anger, we also find in the basic DNA of anger complaining, brooding, irritability, bickering. And that is so true. It's this weird thing that is the same thing, but it can look like as simple as bickering or as horrific as a mass shooting. And it's anger. And I don't think he's exaggerating when he says that. I think it's accurate. It just feels crazy to think. Because I want to think that what is happening over there that's so horrific is different. It's completely different. It's different, but it's different in the level of quality, not different in the thing. It's more of the same thing that's going on with me. Unchecked, out of control, maybe, or even maybe fed and encouraged. But it's the same kind of thing. We all experience anger, whether it's just being stubborn, argumentative, or volatile, whether it's bitterness, or as he says, even if you're quieter. And the way we do anger, some of us explode, some of us simmer, some of us seem dormant, but all of us express and experience anger. Which is true. I think that's absolutely true. So we're going to talk about ourselves a good bit. There's a place later on, pretty quickly in here, though. We'll deal with the fact that, yes, everybody has an anger issue, but let's be honest. Some people have a worse issue. Let's just be honest. They do. It's more difficult for some people to control it. Some people maybe don't control it. Some people's anger has a bigger impact, maybe just because they express it more differently. So we're going to deal with that in the sense of how do you deal with that? Maybe it's not your anger so much as you're around that. How do we deal with that as well? So we will get to that. I'm not making light of it. I'm not going to say, like, everybody's anger is equal, man. Like, we know that's not true. So we're not going to act like it is. But we're also not going to act like we're 100% innocent. Like, oh, I'm never angry. I'm always nice, you know. Man, you might be nice. I've known people who are nice and angry at the same time. My Aunt Dolores was like that. She was the most polite person I've ever met. And yet, sometimes, you can just get the heebie-jeebies. I felt like, I think she's casting a spell on me or something. She was nice. anyway, so the types of anger. So in here in chapter 1, he has a category. Well, he doesn't have a category. He just starts with these headings. The domestic gunslingers, the volcano, the iceberg, the morass, the misery, and the possibility of hope. I'll explain some of that for you who are like me and don't understand what that means. If you do know what it means, congratulations. I had to look it up. So what are these? These are real life examples. I'm assuming that have come out of his years of counseling ministry and maybe some case studies that he's done. And I'll go ahead and say I'm sure he's changed the names of people. But so we're going to use their names that he uses. The first, this couple, Willie and Brenda, who he says ended up in a literal gunfight in their house. They're a married couple, and they were shooting at each other. Not, you know, okay, Grouse style, but like through the walls of their house, just like firing rounds at each other. And, you know, got so incredibly upset that they literally started shooting at each other. Then there's this lady Helen he calls the volcano. And Helen, huh, I just got that. Helen, Helen was in her 60s, and he said, consumed with hatred. And he goes on to talk about how her anger has destroyed every relationship in her life, and she's never really seen herself as the problem. It's always, everybody's doing this to me, and everything, she's just on a hair trigger, ready to explode all the time. And then he comes to the iceberg, which is this kid named Jimmy, he says, who doesn't show any emotion, cold, calculating. Even when pressed, does that make you angry, Jimmy? He says, no, I don't get angry, I get even. Something like that. And you know, he makes the point that it looks totally different, but there's definitely anger there, it's simmering underneath the surface. And the last person is a story. He tells a story called The Morass and the Misery, or The Morass and the Misery. So, again, I had to look that up. I don't know what that meant, and I might even be saying it wrong. What is the morass? Morass is something that evokes a deeply unpleasant, complex, inescapable situation. The idea of literature is used to describe overwhelming, soul-engulfing sorrow, or a feeling of being trapped without a clear path out. So he tells a story about a young mother and a small child in the store he sees, and clearly the kid is used to, the only way he gets anything is griping and complaining and begging his mom. And so he's doing that the whole time, just unrelenting. And then the mom is vicious and hateful, and even at one point slaps the kid in the middle of the store and tells him, like, I'm going to leave you, I hate you, and stuff like this. And the kid doesn't even seem to be upset, just kind of toddles behind him, muttering under his breath. And, you know, he's talking about seeing this and noting how complex that anger must be and how they're both angry and acting angrily. And over all of these illustrations, he has his own personal illustration, which seems kind of silly. I'll tell you what it is. So he and his wife are pretty newly married, and she's cleaning up after, maybe they, I think, have kids, so not too newly, but she's cleaning up after the kids one day. It's been a long day, and he's reading a magazine, and she kind of passive-aggressively says something like, it would be nice to get some help. And his reaction was to, you know, get stubborn and kind of bury himself deeper in the magazine for a minute, and then he eventually gets up and helps. And so he's like, well, see how this anger, you know, you know, you're reading that in light of these things, and you're thinking, well, that's kind of like when somebody asks you in a job interview, what's your greatest weakness, and you think, and you say, like, well, I guess I care too much sometimes, you know. It's like a cop-out answer. It's like he said, yeah, I get angry too, but, you know, not really. But I think it works really well because he's demonstrating it's not a big deal, is it? Well, actually, it is a big deal. It's a small thing, but it's a big thing. And if we catch it when it's small, then it doesn't turn into years of embitterment and anger and resentment towards your spouse. And he overlays kind of his experience with anger on top of these kind of really exaggerated stories. I think that's helpful because we need to see our anger in life in terms of real life and not just out there kind of on the movie screen, sort of like the huge blow up and the obviously crazy examples of, you know, husband and wife shooting at each other. Because I'm pretty sure none of us have ever done that. And so we might say, well, at least I'm not that bad. I don't really deal with anger. I've never tried to shoot anybody. But yeah, we all deal with anger to some degree. Let's see, there's something I wanted to mention to you. I'm not sure where it fell in the book, but anyway, he says, anger properly placed on sin is a sort of righteous anger. And he notes something he's going to come back to, which I think is actually really interesting to me, that he has, oh, I remember what it was. So in that story about the mother and the child, he realized actually good, because what he was angry at was wrong. It was wicked. It was the kind of thing that makes God angry. And so we ought to be, and he should have been angry at that. Because there's a sort of anger that's motivated not by yourself, but out of love for others. An anger that God sees, a desire that seeks to have God help or heal or save or judge righteously. We want to see God intervene. We want to see someone intervene and help. Maybe that's us. Maybe that's someone else. There's a proper object of our anger. And I already said this, but in short, we should be angry at what angers God. The things that would anger God. I think there's probably more to it when it comes to application, but that's the idea. And he mentions too, like, this story, he gets a lot of mileage out of it, but this is the kind of thing, this doesn't show up in the self-help book. These people are not going to be helped by the self-help techniques of just telling it like it is. And what do you give this kind of person? They need more than breathing techniques. This mom has had her anger ripened through the years. Now, he's kind of making his assumptions on this. You know, and what's going on in her life, he can imagine a complex, evil set of situations or circumstances that's laid on layers of desire, despair, a bleak future, aggravation, hopelessness, embarrassment, a cycle of bad decisions encouraged by emotional embitterment. And when she sees the boy, she doesn't even, she's not so much angry at him as just the fact that this is her life. I'm angry that this boy is here, that I'm here in the grocery store. I'm angry at everybody and everything. She has no hope. So we have to have something that offers more than a self-help technique. We have something that offers hope. And that's what hopefully we're gonna come across. We'll see. So earlier I mentioned being on the receiving end of somebody's anger or somebody's rage. That can be difficult because we've probably all been there, and we may not even realize that the people around us are on the receiving end of our anger and our rage sometimes. It's I'm gonna do a little experiment with you in here, okay? Y'all okay with that? Zane, you might be my guinea pig.
Let's do it.
Okay, so I did this with my kids one time. Again, my kids. They're my real guinea pigs. But I didn't ask their permission. Because there's a sense in which anger takes hostage the room. Not just you. You don't just get angry by yourself in a room. You know what I mean? You ever been in the room with somebody who's angry? It's unnerving. So, Zane's all right if I make an example out of you tonight?
Let's do it.
Okay, I'm going to do this. But, all right, Zane, what did you eat dessert tonight?
I did.
Why didn't you eat dessert? Okay. That's kind of everybody's, what happens? What happens when somebody yells in an angry tone? Everybody can feel it. Am I right? Like, everybody was like,
oh, you did that to your kids?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I did it to my kids.
Next week, he's eating his dessert.
But the point is made, it's not just me who's angry. Now I've affected everybody in this room. Now, I wasn't really
James
angry.
James Watchman out of his pleasure.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We're going to talk about that later on. But anger has physical manifestations. Everybody in here, your pulse rate went up. Your muscles tightened. You had a physical response to that. Now, not an emotional, because you understood what was going on. But just think about it. If I am really angry, mood you're in, the way you talk, the way you look. We've all had the eyes cut at us. Somebody's on the receiving end of anger, and I'm stepping on my toes in the, for a future talk, but you can't. You can be angry at an inanimate object, sure, your car or something, but your anger has an object. And a lot of times, it is a person, right? A lot of times, we're angry at somebody, whether it's the random driver or the person behind the speaker at the drive-thru or whoever, maybe even God. Our anger has an object. So it's a two-party system there. You might be angry at your dog or something, but very often your anger is directed at a person, and that anger has an effect on the people around you. Even pretend anger has an effect on the people around you. So are you the one who's holding the room hostage? Are you the one that people have to walk on eggshells around or feel like they? If you are, that's great. That's easy to fix. You can work on yourself a lot easier than you can work on somebody else. So we'll start there, right? We'll commit to start there. As we go forward, we will talk about some techniques, but biblical techniques for handling anger. So we first want to start there. Am I the one doing this? Or maybe I'm not the one, quote, doing it, but do I do it? Have I done it? Do I want to make sure I'm not doing it? We can deal with ourselves. Now, the question of being on the receiving end and how do we go forward, we'll have to address that later on as we go through the study, but we will get to that. Because anger is not always just explosive shouting. We could be dealing with somebody's bitterness, somebody's depression brought on by an unfair circumstance, something in their life that's, we'll say, anger adjacent, which is a lot of the negative emotions and things we'll kind of talk about. We just kind of talked about this mother, and Pallison summed it up, and I think in hopelessness was his main observation there. And I think hopelessness is born out of anger, or maybe born together with anger. Hopelessness often invites anger, especially in the forms of bitterness, complaining, and self-pity. So there's a kind of anger felt at the situation with this mom and this son here that y'all didn't read it yet, but this horrible situation, which is good anger. And it's an anger that cares. I have felt like that. Again, you know, with the people you love, you can think about whoever those are around you. I think of my kids a lot. And I think for me, especially now that my children are getting older and making their own decisions in a lot of ways, this is very true of me right now. There's an anger that's born out of love, because if you make bad grades, it doesn't affect me. I'm not the one who's not going to get a job. I'm not the one who's, you know, going to be emotionally stunted. I'm not the one who's immature or unwise or irresponsible. I mean, you'll deal with that one day. So it doesn't work, but it's a righteous sort of an anger. And again, I hate to keep saying this, but we will talk more about that idea of righteous and good anger. So he closes out, I think, the chapter here. Yep. Page 19 and following, with a heading that says, "People like you and me." And I got about 10 minutes here. We'll get through the last part of this chapter, I think. But so people like you and me. And so there's an implied question. So how are we alike? And Pallison's asking the question, how am I and all of you alike? How is the author and us alike? And he says, well, there's some things I know about you. I know one, that you get angry too. Okay, that's number one. Yeah, I think we all can admit to that. There's nobody probably who's going to say, I never get angry about anything. I think there's a lot of people who could say, I don't get angry that much, or I'm not an angry kind of person, and that's probably true. But there's nobody that can say, I don't ever. So we experience some kind of anger. And secondly, he says, I know also that your anger is sometimes justified. Like, truly, something bad happened to you. You were wronged. It is accurate that you were treated bad. Something that shouldn't have happened to you. So, yeah, there's a justified sort of anger that happens to us sometimes. And he kind of admits to that. This is a theme running through the book, but also under this heading, page 20, he kind of just lays this thought out here, which doesn't feel like it fits, but I want to mention it to you. This might be something you would want to highlight. I did. He says, anger is meant to be laced with mercy and loving intent. Does that ring any bells? And then he says, how about a parent, a coach, a coworker, teacher, pastor? I see at least one coach in the room. And if you've ever had a coach, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Or probably a parent or a teacher. You know, there's a sense in which the same kind of a thing as I mentioned to my kids. Like, there is an anger there that is laced with mercy, laced with loving intent. But it doesn't mean we're not upset. We're not angry. Be angry and do not sin. Be angry and have mercy. Be angry and lace it with love. Which I think is a huge point to be made. Third way he says, I know we are alike. He says, I think you are angry and often unjustified. Okay, so sometimes your anger is justified, sometimes it's not. Maybe it's some small thing and your anger is just blown out of proportion. It goes way beyond what's reasonable. I've felt that before. I felt this kind of... I remember a couple years ago, I was struggling with this, to be honest with you. Where I would be angry, and I knew, as I'm kind of blowing up, like, I know that this is disproportionate. This is a small thing. Why am I so upset about this? And I thought to myself, but I can't help it. But the truth is, I could help it. I could. I could have shut my mouth. I could have walked away. But I didn't. You ever been there? You give yourself a pass, and you're like, I just couldn't help it. I had to let it out. Yeah, I think we have. And the reality is, yeah, we could have helped it. You could have. Sometimes there is no excuse. The fourth way we're like is inner anger. We become destructive. When we started out, constructive. Okay, sometimes, and maybe not everybody. He makes the case that everybody, but I think that's a common thing either way. You try to do the right thing. I want... My goal here is to do something good. I'm upset, I'm angry, I'm going to address it. But before we get to the end of the road here, it's gone bad on us. It's gone sideways. I started off trying to be calm and address this, and I just couldn't keep it on the rails. I'm going to tell my dad. He was famous for this, at least in my house. He was famous for what I call an anger snowball, which is come home and why the dishes still in the sink. I told y'all when you got off the bus, clean the kitchen and the dishes are still in the sink. 20 minutes later, we're yelling about clothes. clothes being on the floor and bad grades, and it's just that snowball is rolling down the hill and it's picking up everything in its path. And before we're done, I'm in trouble for 8 things that happened last week or 2 weeks ago because he got into this anger snowball where it just gets away from me. Started off constructive. You had an expectation. We had an expectation. You failed to meet it. You know, we need to have a talk about it. And now we're just blowing up about something way down the line. We start out constructive. We end up destructive. The fifth way he says we're all alike is, whether right or wrong, there are times when what happened, he says, there have been times when, well, let me read what he says. My notes don't make sense. Whether you were right or wrong to get upset, there have been times when anger at what happened hung around a lot longer than it should. I did write it correctly. That just don't make sense. We call that holding a grudge, right? Not letting it go. That's another way to say it, right? Maybe we're obsessing everything. We're brooding over it. He says here, you're brooding, replaying video clips, rehearsing. Man, I do that a lot. I didn't realize I do that. I do that. I replay the videotape. And what do you do when you replay the videotape? You get mad and you do what?
Find even more things.
Find even more things? I tell you what I do. I think to myself, you know what I should have said? You know what I could have done? I was lucky I didn't say this or do that. If that happens again, I tell you what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And we make ourselves madder and we think about it and we brood on it. It doesn't help, does it? It never resolves it. Not to me. Unless you can actually catch yourself and speak truth, which you don't need to brood on it in order to do that. But it doesn't help us to do that, to rehash it, to let it hang around and think about it. If you want to think about it, if it's bothering you that much, then do something about it. Remember I said your anger has an object. If it's your dog, you may not be able to discuss it, but if it's your brother or your spouse or your child, you have some way to handle it. You can go talk to them. You know, you can handle that. Six, anger can be complex. He says, I know this about you. He says, if you've piled up some mileage on life's odometer, I know that your anger has probably accumulated some complexities. So anger can be complex. Life grinds you down, burns you up, wears you out. What does he mean by that? We get jaded, we get cynical. Not everybody does, not everybody to the same degree. But if we're not careful, the complexities of anger, the fact that it touches so many parts of our lives and overlaps in so many places, it can bring about that sort of cynicism and jadedness. Seventh, he says, there's an unexpected problem we all probably share. There are times when we ought to be upset, but we are not. Now, that is something we will address later on, for sure. We ignore something we shouldn't ignore. We refuse to act when maybe we should. We lack the outrage at something that God is mad at, but maybe we're just like, I don't feel like being bothered with that right now. And the last thing he says, anger is hard to change. He says every one of us has a hard time changing. And the Romans, not Book of Romans, but the actual people with the swords, they had a saying, essentially, he says, anger is a brief madness. You ever think about that? You ever do it during your rehearsal times when you're thinking about what you said and you're honest with yourself? And do you ever actually think, like, what was I thinking? So mad. Why did I say that? I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I said that. You ever thought that of yourself? Yeah, why? Anger makes you stupid. It really does. It makes you blind, like you can't see straight. You can't think straight. You believe things that aren't true. And you say things that you wouldn't say. does. Okay, that's the close of chapter one. We're right out of time. There's a couple questions at the end. If you do read it, take a look at the questions. Like I said, you don't have to write things down if you don't want to. You do? Great. This is for you. I encourage you to do that. I think it'll give you the most out of the study if you do that. Next week, chapters 2 and 3.